start with going through the storyline books of the Old Testament that we've been learning. And repetition is the key to learning. And repeating things out loud helps the memory process. So I invite you to join the others and let's say the themes and the outlines for these books. The book of Genesis is the book of beginnings. And the outline is creation, fall, flood, Babel, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Exodus is the book of leaving Egypt. And the outline is exit, law, tabernacle. Leviticus is the book of holiness. And the outline is the way to God by sacrifice, the walk with God by sanctification. Numbers is the book of wandering. And the outline is leaving Sinai, Sinai to Kadesh, Kadesh to Kadesh, and Kadesh to the plains of Moab. There on the plains of Moab, Israel's ready to enter into the promised land, and Moses has got one final responsibility, and that is to repeat the law to them before they go in. So the book of Deuteronomy is that repeating of the law. So Deuteronomy is the book of obedience. The outline is Moses' first sermon, Moses' second sermon, Moses' third sermon, Moses' final charge and death. That ends the first section of the books of the Old Testament in the Hebrew Bible. We call that the Pentateuch or the Law, the first five books of the Old Testament. And Israel's now ready to go into the promised land with new leadership, and that leader was Joshua. Joshua is the book of conquest. We're going to go into the land, conquer the land. The outline is entering the land, overcoming the land, occupying the land. Judges is the book of failure. 400 years of dismal failure. We have a recurring pattern, and that pattern is sin, slavery, supplication, salvation. We have one bright spot in that time frame, and that is Ruth. Ruth is the book we call the Oasis of Grace. And the outline for Ruth is Ruth's noble choice, Ruth's lowly service, Ruth's tender appeal, and Ruth's marital joys. This Moabitess lady became one of the Gentile women in the genealogy of Jesus Christ, a picture of God's grace in her life. First Samuel's the book of transition. What are we transitioning from? Judges, what are we translating or transitioning to? Kings. So we're going from the time where judges kind of provided the leadership of Israel to the time that they had kings. So we have the last of the major judges who anointed the first two of Israel's kings. So that means the outline is Samuel, Saul, David. Second Samuel's the book of David's reign. And the outline is David's triumphs and David's troubles. The book of 1 Kings is the book of disruption. This is the kingdom of David, as was ruled over by his son Solomon, and that kingdom split into two, or it became disrupted and broken into two kingdoms, the northern and southern kingdom. So the outline is the glory of the United Kingdom and the tragedy of the divided kingdom. Second Kings, then, is the book of dispersion. And these two kingdoms ended up in slavery. The outline is the northern kingdom, both kingdoms, and the southern kingdom. As the book of Second Kings wraps up the history of each of those kingdoms going into slavery. The northern kingdom went into slavery to Assyria. The capital city of Assyria was Nineveh. That's why Jonah was so important. The capital city of the Assyrian Empire was Nineveh, and the Assyrians came in and took the northern kingdom into captivity. The southern kingdom went into Babylonian captivity, and so both kingdoms ended up being dispersed into captivity. Here's a little chart that I gave you on one of your previous handouts that just trace the kingdom. The United Kingdom under Saul, David, and Solomon broke into two kingdoms. The Northern Kingdom had 19 kings and ended in Assyrian captivity. The Southern Kingdom had 20 kings, ended in Babylonian captivity. Now, when we look at this, we're going to focus on this. Let's go back a slide. I'm sorry, did I do that? Let's go back a slide. We're going to focus on the... No, let's go forward a slide. Am I doing something? Here we go. We're going to focus on the Babylonian captivity. And this is the key captivity, 70-year Babylonian captivity. And to understand the captivity, we see the history of the southern kingdom going into captivity at the end of the book of 2 Kings. 2 Kings ends with the Judah going into Babylonian captivity. But there are some prophets that are important with regards to this period of time, and we're going to look at those prophets. One of them was Daniel, and we're going to look at Daniel for a few moments this evening. And then two others were Jeremiah and Ezekiel. And Ezekiel also wrote Lamentations. So these prophets right here are the ones we're going to look at over the next couple of times together on Sunday nights and focus on what this Babylonian captivity is all about. Crucial time in the history of the nation of Israel. And a crucial time with regard to prophecy and God's faithfulness to fulfill prophecy. Okay, let's go ahead and go to the next slide. And the Babylonian captivity had three parts to it. And you have this on your little handout that you got tonight. And there are three stages to the captivity, to the beginning of the captivity. So, in other words, Nebuchadnezzar didn't just come in once and conquer the southern kingdom and tear down Jerusalem and take everyone into slavery. But rather, there were three successive invasions by Nebuchadnezzar. And the first was Nebuchadnezzar versus Jehoiakim with a K, Jehoiakim. And he captured a prophet by the name of Daniel. And that's the one we're going to focus on tonight. So in 2 Kings chapter 24, you see in your little notes there, 2 Kings chapter 24, and in Daniel chapter 1, we read about Nebuchadnezzar coming in. Nebuchadnezzar did not totally destroy the southern kingdom when on his first invasion. He came and conquered them militarily, left the nation operating, set up a king that would pay taxes back to Babylon and allowed the kingdom to continue. And so that was the first stage of the Babylonian captivity. Second stage was Nebuchadnezzar versus Jehoiachin with a CH. And when Nebuchadnezzar came and conquered Jehoiachin, he took Ezekiel into captivity. And then the third stage was when Nebuchadnezzar came in the last time and conquered Zedekiah, who was king at that time. And when he conquered Judah under Zedekiah's leadership, he totally destroyed the city and burnt the city, tore down the walls, pillaged the city. Just horrible, horrible actions against the nation of Israel and left them totally destroyed, carted the people into captivity, and that ended the nation of Judah, the southern kingdom, at that third stage. Now, Jeremiah is not mentioned there in those kings. We have Daniel going into captivity. We have Ezekiel going into captivity. Jeremiah was left in Jerusalem. They left a remnant, a small number of people in the land. They didn't take every person. Some hid, some ran and came back afterwards. And so there were some vestige of people left in Jerusalem, and Jeremiah was one of them. And so Jeremiah, as we'll see next time, Jeremiah had a ministry, ministering to the people whose lives had been crushed and destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, and were just etching out a living there in Israel. And so Jeremiah had that ministry. Ezekiel was taken into Babylon. And Ezekiel's ministry will be to the remnant that was, to the slaves that were taken from Jerusalem into Babylon. And those slaves had Ezekiel there preaching to them, delivering God's word to them. And then, of course, Daniel, who had gone in the first stage of the captivity, was also in Babylon. But he ended up in the court of the king Nebuchadnezzar. And so his ministry was from a position of political presence. And he was greatly used of God in the political system of Nebuchadnezzar. So we have Daniel in the political system. We have Ezekiel preaching to the slaves and ministering to the slaves. We have Jeremiah back in Jerusalem dealing with the remnant that were left behind. Three stages, different prophets of God that God strategically placed for particular ministries. And we'll be highlighting some of their material and get a handle on the books that God left us in our Bible from those prophets. Okay, next slide. Just here's just some graphics from famous old artwork of the pillaging of Jerusalem, Nebuchadnezzar destroying the people, carting them off to Babylon. The next slide shows an old picture of Babylon. Babylon was quite the city. And here we see an artist's rendering of Babylon, the river that flowed into the city. Here's another one that is a reminder that this is where the Tower of Babel was built. And so this has deep Bible history and history of humanity all the way back to Nimrod. And then the next picture is another artist's rendering of this amazing city of Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar. And one final picture that shows that as well. And we have this city of Babylon. This is the Ishtar Gate. And by the way, as you probably know, they're rebuilding or under Saddam Hussein. He was rebuilding Babylon. And the book of Revelation makes mention of Babylon. And there's a reason to believe that Babylon will be rebuilt and will have a presence in the tribulation period that will be significant. And some believe that it's Rome that was renamed Babylon for religious reasons, that the seat of the mystery Babylonian religions was bequeathed from Babylon to Rome, and Rome became the Babylon spiritually. Hislop's book, The Two Babylons, Babylon and Rome. All of the preachers of many generations that preached that the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church is the Antichrist and that the city of Rome is Babylon of the book of Revelation in the tribulation period, and that the Roman Catholic Church will bring all world religion under her authority and she'll be the one world church. There's a line of thought that equates Rome with Babylon. There's another line of thought that believes Babylon is just Babylon. And the Muslims will be the one world religious dominating power in the tribulation period. And it'll actually be seated in Babylon and a rebuilt Babylon. So we don't know. We'll just see how God works things out. But those are just different lines of thought that fall into place. Okay, at the bottom of your little worksheet, this one chart. Let me just, again, this graphic shows here's the final step when the Jerusalem, the temple was destroyed, when Zedekiah was king, and then we have the captivity here. We have Ezekiel, we've got Jeremiah, we got Daniel. Just another chart, Bible study tool to be able to trace and see how all of this relates together as you read and study your Bible. Let's go to the book of Daniel just for a moment. I want to point out just a couple of things from Daniel. I put the outline on the bottom of your worksheet there. You see that the book of Daniel has two major parts to it. The first part is biographical. It's the personal history of Daniel. That's the part of the book of Daniel that we know most about because that's what all the flannel graph lessons taught us. Daniel's stories of his personal history. And so you see there the listed six major events in Daniel's personal history. He was exiled to Babylon in chapter 1 under Nebuchadnezzar. He interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2. His friends go through the fiery furnace in chapter 3. He interprets another of Nebuchadnezzar's dreams in chapter 4. And then Belshazzar was king of Babylon when he interpreted the handwriting on the wall. And then he spent a night in the lion's den under Darius, the king of Babylon. So we have these six major events that happened in Daniel's personal life as he was there serving in Babylon. And then the second half of the book of Daniel is all about his prophetic ministry. And here's where the Bible student that really loves to study prophecy spends a significant amount of time studying the prophetic ministry of Daniel. Daniel really does give us a time clock of Bible prophecy. Daniel integrates with the book of Revelation. And Daniel gives us the picture of timing and the success of Gentile empires and how God's prophetic time clock will bring prophecy into place. We have the when Belshazzar was king, there were two major visions, a vision of four beasts and a vision of two beasts. And then in chapter 9, the 70 weeks of years. This was a key prophecy in which God showed Daniel a prophetic time clock of 70 sevens. And we read about it in Daniel chapter number 9. In fact, let's turn over. This is a significant, one of the most significant prophecies we have regarding end time events. And we read about it in chapter 9, and I'm jumping down to verse number 24. Chapter 9 and verse number 24, the Bible says 70 weeks, and the Hebrew word for weeks means 7 or 77s. Could be 7 hours, could be 7 minutes, could be 7 days. We use the word week to speak of 7 days. It could be 7 months, it could be 7 whatever. It just means a 7. And so, 70 sevens are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city. Now notice, Daniel is in Babylon when God gives him this vision and he writes it down. He is in captivity in the court of Nebuchadnezzar. And God gives him this vision. 70 sevens are determined upon thy people. By the way, what is 70 sevens? How many is that as a number? 70 times 7 is 490. So we've got 490-somethings. We don't know if they're 490 hours, 490 days, 490 years. We're just 77s. 490-somethings are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city. Now, this is thy people. Daniel's people is the Jewish people. And his holy city is the city of Jerusalem that is buried in rubble as this vision is being given. To finish the transgression, Israel is under judgment of God because of their transgression. To make an end of sins, to bring them to the end of their rebellion, to make reconciliation, that Israel might be saved. To bring in everlasting righteousness, that God's kingdom might be established in righteousness. To seal up the vision and prophecy, to bring an end to all future events and prophetic events, and to anoint the Most Holy. To anoint the one who is called here the Most Holy. Now, therefore, and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem, we have a beginning of the 77s or the 490-somethings. The 490-somethings will begin when there is a commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem. That didn't happen if you look in your little that didn't happen till later on. This vision was given when Darius was the king, and so lost a train of thought there. Sorry. So from the command to build Jerusalem, which we will see in Ezra chapter 1, back when down the road when we're finished with the captivity, we'll see this command being given in Ezra. From the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem, that begins the 490, unto the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Okay, let's figure that out. What's 7 weeks and 62 weeks? Well, that all adds up to a number. Get the old calculators going. From the commandment to restore unto Messiah the Prince shall be that number of weeks, and the street shall be built again, and the wall even in troublous times. And after 62 weeks, shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. Messiah is going to die. He's going to be put to death, but he's not going to be put to death for his own sin. Now, if you run the numbers, what you end up with is there are 490-somethings They're divided up into three different groups of numbers that all add together to 490. The key is that at the end of the 483rd week, at the end of the 483rd time frame, Messiah will be cut off. That's the key to the prophecy. Because we are looking backwards instead of forwards. Daniel would have known that starting with the command to rebuild Jerusalem, that a clock started. And he knew there was a particular time frame, but he didn't know whether it was days, weeks, years, months. But after 483 years, and chronologists that have worked in the minute details of this prophecy tell us that exactly 483 years from the time that Cyrus the Great decreed to rebuild Jerusalem until the day Jesus Christ was crucified was 483 years. So we know it wasn't 490 days or 490 months or 490 weeks, it was 490 years. And 483 of those years were completed when Jesus Christ was nailed to the cross, leaving 1 week. 69 sevens ended. We have 1 7 left after Messiah the Prince is cut off. And Daniel's prophecy says that the people of the Prince shall come and destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be for the flood and the end of the war and desolations, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. There's that one last seven. And during that one last seven, the political personage in charge will confirm a covenant. He'll make a political covenant with God's people. And in the midst of that week, he'll break the covenant. He'll sacrifice and shall cause the sacrifice and oblation shall cease, which indicates to us that a part of that covenant was the rebuilding of the temple and the restoring of animal sacrifice. And in the middle of that seven, he'll break the covenant and cause all sacrifice and oblation to cease, and for the overspreading of the abominations make desolate, even unto the consummation determined shall be poured upon the desolate. Which means that that last seven will come to a conclusion at the end of what we call the tribulation period, which is a 7-year period after the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Now, anyone who is sharp in thinking would ask the question, why didn't all of that happen 7 years after the crucifixion of Jesus Christ? And that is a very interesting question to study out. Why do we have 2,000 years since the crucifixion of Christ instead of a 7-year period? And that goes into Israel's rejection of their Messiah and turning him over to the Roman authorities and God putting a hold on his prophetic clock and introducing a mystery that is not told in the Old Testament. The New Testament reveals to us that there was a mystery, and it's called the Church Age. It's called the Age of Grace. It's the period of world evangelism where we evangelize the Gentile nations of the world. And it is an undisclosed period of time prophetically. And so therefore it's called a mystery, a teaching that was never mentioned before, that was never revealed before. So the New Testament era tells us that there is a mystery period of time that we have no clue as to when it will end, but we do know that in God's prophetic time clock that there is a 7-year period someday in the future during which a political leader will make a covenant with the nation of Israel. The temple will be rebuilt. Animal sacrifice will begin again. He'll then break the covenant and persecute the people, and the Messiah will return to rescue the people from annihilation. That's, of course, revealed in other prophecies and particularly in the book of Revelation. So Daniel has all this prophetic teaching about God's time clock and future events and Gentile world powers and how all of this will come into play. And that's the prophetic ministry of Daniel. Let me get you to turn to the last chapter. Let me close with you'll notice at the very end of your little worksheet, the last thing there is letter F, What should we do? And in light, this is Daniel back in the Old Testament era. He's given all of this information, all of these prophecies of future events. And then the question comes down, what should we do in light of all this? And chapter 12 addresses that. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of the people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation. You know, that's a scary thought. There will be a time of troubles such as never was since there was a nation, even to the same time. You know, Israel's going through a lot of heartache in its history. We think of the Holocaust. We think of what Hitler did to the nation of Israel. We think of what is happening, what has happened to Israel over their history, time and time again, anti-Semitism, the persecution of the Jewish people. And yet God says there shall be a time of trouble such as never was. That means Israel's got some rough days ahead of her. When this political leader that unites the world in opposition to the Jewish people and seeks to annihilate them once and for all, the final solution, once and for all, will drive them into the Mediterranean Sea. Once and for all, we'll be rid of these pesky Jews. Once and for all, we will destroy Israel. And it's going to be worse than Hitler's Holocaust. It will be worse than anything they'd ever had happened before. Verse number 1 says, even to the same time, and at that time, the people shall be delivered. Every one that shall be found written in the book. You know, the book of Revelation ends by telling us that Jesus Christ personally comes back at the end of the tribulation and rescues the Jews that have not been annihilated by the Antichrist and the world military armies. And Jesus will personally come back and rescue them from annihilation, being annihilated. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall wake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book. Even to the time of the end, many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. And Daniel goes on to write, shut up the book. This is for a future day. People down the road are going to read this book of Daniel. They're going to study it. They're going to ponder it. They're going to read it and reread it and compare it with other prophecies and think about it. And at the end of the day, there are going to be people who are wise enough to understand God and to believe God. And they'll shine as the firmament. And the people who turn many to righteousness, the people who are involved in evangelism, the people who are involved in trying to get unsaved saved. They that turn many to righteousness will be as the stars forever and ever. And if you come down to verse number 9, he said, go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, and the wicked shall do wickedly. And none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. That's another interesting little statement. Why is it that some people just don't understand? The Bible says the wicked shall, none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,305 days, but go thou thy way till the end be, for thou shalt rest and stand in thy lot at the end of days. Daniel is far more to us than a book that tells us about a lion's den or a fiery furnace. Daniel is the book that God gave us that chronicles the details about God's time frame of world prophecy and how things will end. So Daniel holds a strategic part in our Bible, understanding that the captivity was not final. The captivity was not the end of the Jewish people. Even though for 70 years they live in slavery, they have a future. And that future has a lot of ups and downs yet to come. And God told Daniel to write it down for people down the road, like you and me, that pick up the book of Daniel and read it and are wise enough to understand what God said is coming upon this world. That's the book of Daniel in our Bible.